and welcome to another episode of Radio War Nerd. The date today is February 5th, 2025, and this is episode 498. You are listening to Radio War Nerd. Subscribe at patreon.com/Radio War Nerd. I am the co-host, Mark Ames, in Ice Age Western New York. And I'm on the line with the War Nerd, John Dolan, a.k.a. Gary Brecher, in southern Italy. John, how you doing?
Good. I mean, we've had like 2 weeks of just being in the same place, which is my dream. Just never move.
Yeah,
never do anything. Moving
around so much again in the last year.
Yeah.
Good. Let's first introduce, we have a great guest today, a friend of the show. Got to know him through the amazing Radio War Nerd community, the Facebook community. Jacob Stenfalk, and we've invited Jacob on because, among other things, well, we're going to talk about Greenland today. And Jacob happens to rule over Greenland because he is Danish. And so Jacob can hopefully enlighten us on some matters involving Greenland, because as people probably know, Trump is threatening to take Greenland, buy it, take it, whatever. So first of all, just welcome to the show, Jacob. Glad to have you on. I mean, we've wanted to have you on for a while. There are a lot of things we could talk with you about. This happens to be the first time, but I'm sure you're going to be on in the future. Anyway, welcome to the show, Jacob.
Thanks.
Let's introduce Jacob a little bit first. I mean, we got to know him through the Facebook page because Jacob is a really interesting, very smart guy. Like a lot of the people in that community are kind of almost scarily smart and great insights. And one thing I've just noticed over time is Jacob has this great kind of no bullshit insights into the architecture of trade flows in this world. And I'm sure this is related to the fact that he's Danish, because if I'm not mistaken, the Danes are like, the Danes, like if you want shipping, you go to the Danes. Denmark has this kind of, I don't know, monopsony power on global shipping. Is that true, Jacob?
Not quite.
No?
I mean, the currently second largest container liner in the world, the top three trade places from time to time. Currently, I think the Danish container liner is the second largest in the world. Dry bulk is the Greeks have been traditionally dominant, but I haven't followed that market particularly closely. And tankers is that's an interesting and a somewhat opaque market that I also haven't followed particularly closely. But yeah, in container logistics, Denmark plays an outsized role.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's like 2,000-3,000 people who are intimately employed in that sector in Denmark. The weight of the company by headcount is elsewhere. But yeah, and it's been, I was employed there for a while, but for the last 6 years or so, I have been in the public sector doing semi-related IT standardization work. Not anything related to the subjects we're discussing today. If I had been doing work related to them, I probably would not be here.
Let's make that clear. Like, you're appearing today completely separate from wherever you're working, and these are just your own opinions, right? And
I am appearing here as a citizen, which I'm allowed to do, and I'm not discussing any confidential information, partly because I don't know any confidential information relevant to the subject at hand, And my opinions are my own. They don't represent any past, present, or future employers.
Okay. So a quick question, and this will relate to Greenland. Is a reason why Denmark punches so well above its weight in the global shipping sphere, does it go back to the Vikings who has settled Greenland?
No. Is the short answer. It goes back to, everything goes back to every previous point in history.
Sure.
But it really is an age of sail thing more than, there were plenty of countries that had that had large, for the time, for the Iron Age, large trade networks and did not mm-hmm. end up with large ocean marines in the age of sail. But Denmark was one of the countries that came through the age of sail with a large merchant marine and a long large tradition of capable seafarers, and that translated into sort of industrial era large merchant marine.
Right.
But so did England, and England doesn't have a large merchant. They have a fishing fleet, but a lot of this is just, there was always going to be a handful of countries that have large cargo fleets, and Denmark happens to be one of that. I think it's mostly luck of the draw.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about Greenland, and maybe start off with some kind of background facts and then a little bit of history. I mean, John, looking at your notes, John, do you want to introduce Greenland a little bit? And
we mostly think of Greenland as that place that used to be under the ice, and it's not under the ice, or it's not going to be under the ice much longer. So how big is it really? For one thing, most of us see Greenland on a global map, and when you get an ordinary global map, anything morphs into a giant blob if it's at the far north or far south. So how big is Greenland?
I don't recall the land area off the top of my head, but it is the biggest island in the world.
Right.
It used to be thought that Australia was the biggest island in the world, but Australia got promoted to a continent sometime before Pluto got demoted to no longer being a planet.
Right,
So I'm looking up stats here. So it's the third largest area in North America after the U.S. and Canada, and it's more than three times the size of Texas. I mean, it would be like adding—
Well, that's good anyway.
Yeah, that's good. It would be like adding another 25% to the continental U.S. And I just have to add here real quickly, and don't take any offense to this, Jacob, as a Dane, but as a kid, I used to write book, little novel books, fantasy books, and one of them I remember writing. It was very short, and it was mostly about the pictures of a guy in a super futuristic jet. But one of them was about how, because of war with the Soviet Union, America had to expand its borders by taking Canada and Greenland. And I swear to God, I think this is a virus for a lot of American males. And I think that's something Trump is tapping into deeply here. I could be projecting.
Ice Station Zebra. battle under the ice. I mean, I guess we should talk about what the prospects are for the ice cap over Greenland. Is it going to disappear completely, or just shrink to the center of the island? Or?
So the center of the ice cap is the oldest parts of the center of the ice cap are about 100,000 years old, and they have. That's not because it was ice-free 100,000 years ago. That's because when the ice gets compressed enough, it melts and it runs out from under the glacier. So there has been ice on parts of Greenland, permanent glacier, for as long as we have ice core records, which goes back, as I said, about 100,000 years. That being said, in a business-as-usual scenario, we are looking at an amount of warming that is unprecedented within the last 100,000 years. So I think the honest answer is we probably don't know, at least under a business-as-usual scenario. If we right. hit some of the more responsible global warming targets, which it looks like we won't, but if we do, then we will stay within temperature swings that are at least close to being within the historical record of the last 100,000 years, and then we can be fairly confident that there will be some ice. Mm-hmm. Not as much as okay. there is today, but some.
So let's go back again a little bit of very quick history here. The Danes or the Vikings, what would be Denmark and Norwegians, I guess. Before they were there, I guess there were what they call circumpolar peoples. I guess these would be like Yavinic or Eskimos and what they call in Alaska, had been there for previously a couple thousand years before the Vikings.
Actually, the Inuit came fairly late to Greenland. They'd been there a couple of hundred years, I think.
The Inuit, yeah.
Yes,
talking
yes.
about the sort of paleo Eskimos, as they're called.
Yeah, and there's two cultures actually. It turns out that the people the Vikings encountered when they came to Greenland are not the same people that live there today.
Right.
So what happened from the Norse perspective? Which is the only perspective we have written records for.
Right.
The rest is archaeology. But what happened from the Norse perspective is around the late 900s, this guy, Eric the Red, committed some, you know, slight murder in Norway and got run out of town. But he got given enough advance warning, he was convicted, and his sentence was... he wasn't welcome in Norway anymore, but he was allowed to gather up his stuff and his relatives and his henchmen and his slaves and put them on some ships and go to Iceland. And Iceland was not settled at the time. They knew it was there, but it wasn't settled because it was, you know, Iceland is far away and it's cold and getting there is annoying and somewhat dangerous.
This is like the setup to so many sci-fi and fantasy novels, first of all. Yeah. Like how they... anyway, go ahead, yeah.
So Iceland was uninhabited when Eric the Red came there. And the Norsemen brought sheep and they wrecked the place with the sheep within a couple of generations. But that's a different story for a different time. Anyway... the next generation after Eric the Red, you have Leif the Lucky, who goes to Greenland for reasons that I don't remember, and I'm not even sure it's entirely clear why, except that, you know, these people had a lot of sons and there's not a lot of arable land on Iceland, and there was less arable land on Iceland in the second generation than there was when they arrived because sheep's destruction of topsoil, terraforming the place into uninhabitability by trying to treat it like southern Norway instead of like... It's a climate zone closer to Arctic than southern Norway, and you just can't transplant... The way you do business in southern Norway to Iceland without wrecking the place.
Right. But we should add here, though, the reason they were even able to settle at this time, and I think even why... Well, did they call it Greenland because, like, some real estate scam, you know, come to Greenland, or is it because it was actually greener? Because we're talking about a period when there was, like, a mini warming
yeah,
period.
Yeah, this is the medieval. This is the start of the medieval warm period.
Yeah.
So Leif the Lucky goes to Greenland and to Newfoundland. Well, he didn't call it Newfoundland. He called it Vinland or wine country because he found wine growing there. But he established two colonies on Greenland, East Village and West Village. And they were trading posts for and hunting stations for the fur and ivory trade and some whaling and, you know, the sorts of things that you do on marginal, fairly godforsaken North Atlantic uninhabited islands. They thought Greenland was uninhabited for a while because the Inuit were not, their range did not go that far south. So they go north at one point some years in, and they meet some people that they call scragglers. These were not very, I mean, the Norsemen were not nice people. They meet these people they call scragglers, and their record is they stab them and they bleed when you do that. So not an auspicious first contact.
Yeah, there was also, I remember, a persistent legend about a race of giants up there who were much more skittish than the Eskimo. And even though they were bigger, they were afraid of the Inuit, rather. The Dorset people, right? But I don't know if they're considered myth now.
There is a people called the Dorset people who are, I think the ones the Vikings encountered were the Thule people, and the ones that are the ancestors of the people currently living there are the Dorset people, but I might have gotten that the other way around. Mm. But anyway, they set up some rudimentary trade with the Inuit because the Inuit have more ivory than they can use, but certainly they have enough ivory that they're willing to trade it for things like wood and metalworks. Mm. And the Inuit have very, very little fuel and no mining rights. So metal is very valuable to them, and ivory is very valuable to Europeans.
I'm sorry, real quickly, is the ivory from walruses or from...
Yes,
yeah, okay. Walruses. And what is the ivory used for at that time? Certainly not pianos.
It's decorative. You put it on a boat and you sail it back to Europe and you sell it to the French.
Okay. Yeah, it's tricking out your boat there. Okay, yeah.
Well, it's tricking out some French noble's boat because he can pay. And this goes on for a couple of hundred years, right? And then the medieval warm period ends, and it becomes not really worth it. This was always a marginal post on the North Atlantic trade system. So it becomes not really worth the while to keep sending ships up there. It becomes riskier. The payoff is less. The population in these villages declines. And eventually... the boats stop coming and contact is lost. And we know from the archaeological record that these villages persisted for a while after that. It's a little unclear how they disappeared. We know they did not survive until contact was reestablished a couple hundred years later. It's a little unclear what ended them. It's possible that they came into conflict with Inuit groups and were wiped out, but the archaeological record does not indicate that the villages themselves met violent ends. Mm. It's also possible that, you know, bad wind or all the cows die, they pack up their boats because they had boats, right? They were not totally reliant on the Europeans for transport, and tried to make it back to Iceland and were lost at sea. We know they didn't make it back to Iceland because the people in Iceland kept records. Right. It's also possible that they had a bad wind or lost all the cows, packed up the boats and went to Newfoundland and were just absorbed in the local communities there, or wiped out by conflict with the people who already lived there, or settled somewhere that hasn't been found, and they all died because bad winter. These were very marginal communities, so they were never more than a couple of bad winters away from not existing. And once contact is lost with the trade network that kept them supplied with, among other things, new immigrants, it was always a long shot that they would survive the 300 years or so that it would take to reestablish contact.
Well, even the population now is, what, it's 55,000 Inuit,
something like that. I think it's 57,000 total, and 90-some percent of that is Inuit, and most of the rest is Danish technical specialists and bureaucrats and other things that you need to run a modern country, but the Greenland educational system can't supply itself.
I have a quick question, because does this loom large in, I don't know, horror mythology or any kind of, you know, mystery mythology in Danish popular culture, like what really happened to them? It would seem to me to be the subject. God, it's such a amazing story. It seems.
Yeah. The Roanoke colony looms pretty large even now in the American imagination. Croatoan carved onto the tree and all that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The lost colony.
It's just a historical curiosity. Partly, I think, because the emphasis when, in the version of history that's taught to children, the emphasis is usually on, we have this connection to Greenland that goes back to almost 1,000 years ago, right? And and then it's a little inconvenient for that version of history. It's not kept secret or anything. It's not emphasized that there were these 350 years where, which is like a third of the period where we're claiming historical continuity. The middle third, there was no contact.
Yeah,
The Norwegian kingdom knew that Greenland was there. They knew how to reach it, right? And eventually whaling expeditions started to go there and set up supply points, and not just Norwegian, also English and a couple of other nations. Whaling expeditions. It was just that there was nothing really profitable to do there for, 300 to 400 years, until everybody.
But there was one moment. Sorry, there was one moment in my long lost youth where Greenland sort of made it into the popular consciousness. It was this novel called, in English, Miss Smilla's Sense of Snow, and I remember that novel because it infuriated the life out of me. It was set up as a mystery novel. But at the end, the last line is, there is no resolution. I was furious. It's like, there is no resolution, huh? What if I come to your house and impose one?
Right. So so there's contact lost, and it's reestablished, what, in the early 1600s, the early 17th
century? Something like that, right? When everybody starts painting the map, right? When colonialism starts being in fashion, the Norwegian king goes, we have this place that's ours, that's always been ours, and now we want to send some. They're called explorers again in the version of history that's taught to children. It's the usual. You send a couple of missionaries and some fur trappers and some whalers, and you establish a permanent outpost there, because then you proclaim loudly to all the other Europeans that Greenland is Norwegian and has always been Norwegian and will always be Norwegian, and because we have this
Norwegian or Danish
Norwegian, so legally Norwegian. Norway was at the time in a personal union with Denmark. So it was the Danish king, but it was a Norwegian claim. All this dynastic politics gets a little... It was Danish by way of Norway.
Okay,
right.
And then you establish this podunk little fishing village, and then having established that, all of Greenland is of course yours, and you color in the whole island on your map, right? As usual European stuff. So then in 1803 or 5, something like that, there is this little disagreement between Napoleon and the English. And the English suspect that, and at this point, Denmark has the second largest war fleet in Europe after the English. And the English suspect that Denmark might join Napoleon and bring in this fairly large and somewhat fearsome war fleet. So the English violate Danish neutrality in a surprise attack on Copenhagen, where they burn the city and steal the fleet. And the fleet is caught at anchor in a disadvantageous position, right? They're coming out of the harbor to respond to this English fleet. So this is generally seen as unsporting. And after that, in the version of history that is taught to the Danish, the Danish king was perfectly happy to stay neutral until the English stole his fleet and burned his city. And then he joined the French side of that war. And a couple of years pass, and then the bad guys win at Waterloo, and now Denmark is punished for having joined Napoleon. And the punishment here is that Denmark loses Norway to... Denmark is forced to cede Norway to Sweden because Sweden was allied with the bad guys in that war. But Denmark is forced to cede Norway, but not the North Atlantic colonies, so not Faroe Islands and not Greenland. And that is... that's probably not because they were forgotten. That's probably because... Sweden was a much more serious power in the early 1800s than Denmark. Mm-hmm. And the English and the Dutch had a consistent policy that Denmark should exist, but be weak. Because Denmark sits in the entrance to the Baltic. So they would like to have a country that was not Germany and not Sweden, and located where Denmark is located. And, you know, it's convenient to have these North Atlantic colonies under the control of the smaller, weaker country. So you don't give those along with Norway to Sweden. I'm guessing here, I haven't studied any archives or anything, but that makes sense from an imperial sort of logic that's the peace settlement you impose. And anyway, Norway was the more valuable part, right? The North Atlantic colonies were...
Right.
There's
a lesson here. Always with the English, hit first. Don't let them get your chance. Yeah.
That's funny. So let's bring it up to the 20th century. So basically, as I understand it, the Danes, when Denmark and Norway separate, the Danish kind of embrace Greenland as part of their identity. There is an incident, apparently, when Norway occupied part of eastern Greenland in the 30s. That is at least in the timeline here, John's timeline, but I guess that didn't really go anywhere. But in the 40s, in World War II, of course, it becomes an important place for the Americans, yeah.
The thing to note, just on a geographic note, Greenland has north and south and east and west. Mm-hmm. Well, really, it has north, east, and west. And west is where you can actually live if you want to live somewhat Europeanly. North, you can live in a more traditional Inuit way. And east is... not totally uninhabitable. There are Inuit who live there, and they make an honest go of it. But it is not east is where you get the full North Atlantic experience, shall we say?
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
It's and the Atlantic is a rough sea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I spent a winter in County Clare, and luckily there were like 500-foot cliffs, but, you know, even you could look over them and see what was happening down there, and it was like, how does anything live in that?
Yeah, so all the Danish settlements were until, I mean, even to this day, all the settlements that were that were placed where they are by the Danes or Norwegians are on the southwest side of the island. The east coast settlements are all traditional Inuit settlement locations.
I was kind of surprised to read this, that the U.S. actually occupied Greenland or moved its military in there to forestall a German move, actually about 8 months before, you know, Pearl Harbor and all the declarations of war. So this is April of 1941. And apparently Greenland had, even then, because a lot of this is going to be about minerals and rare earth minerals and other kind of, or strategic minerals. But even then, they were selling cryolite, which is a key ingredient, I think, for smelting aluminum. Is that correct?
That's marginal. Most of Greenland sells fish.
Right, even then. Oh. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, I was surprised when I lived in Russia. For about a couple of years, I worked for this sort of banker, investor from India, and always looking for opportunities. And we met with some Icelandic sort of, businessmen. And I learned then how huge Iceland is in the fishing industry. So I can imagine Greenland is like Iceland. You think this little country with a couple quirky singers, but like they are, you know, they're like, I don't know, Exxon when it comes to fishing. Like they're big.
I mean, all the shrimp you find in Danish supermarkets come from Greenland. Because it's they have a couple of big shrimp factories, and every so often there's some tisking investigative journalism exposing the working conditions, because picking shrimp sucks. You have to do it by hand. It's not really a good getting the shrimp out of the exoskeleton. Is not a highly mechanizable task. They have, for various reasons, nobody seems to have succeeded at mechanizing that. So it's all done by hand, and the ergonomics of doing it are not great.
Well, that's why the fish harvest in Alaska is sort of a way for people who don't fit in American society to make a lot of money in the summer and also do a lot of speed. And they can, you know, work in the factories there about 18 hours a day and then crash the rest of the time. I don't know if Denmark has the same demographics, though.
Not quite. There is a fair amount of fishing as well. Royal Greenland sells a lot of fish, so it's trout, salmon, shrimp, as noted. Used to do a fair amount of whaling. Whaling is not so much anymore. The Inuit have an exemption for, you know, culturally, historically relevant whale hunting. But it's not a commercial activity anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it was an important base, Greenland, for the U.S. during World War II for logistics purposes, mostly, I would think, right, for shipping
As a weather station, mostly.
Oh, okay.
Weather and radio station.
Interesting.
I was amazed to find that, you know, there were a few skirmishes Greenland, you know, between Germans and the sledge patrol, the Eskimo Nice. I'm trying to pronounce this. It's Eskimo and then N-A-E-S. I don't know how that would be pronounced, but a base called that. The Germans ambushed Corporal Eli Knudsen at Sandodden and accidentally killed him with a machine gun burst meant for his dogs.
And we know who won ultimately, so he didn't die in vain. So after the war, the U.S. thought that Greenland was a vital military base and for the, you know, for the new empire. And Truman apparently tried buying it then, 1946, for $100 million, which was kind of a cheapskate offer, I would think. And the Danes decided, no, I guess it wasn't good enough for Denmark. And moving forward, at some point, I guess, during the sort of decolonization period, Denmark devolved Greenland's powers to sort of home rule, right? Starting in like
57. 57.
Oh, okay, 57.
After the United Nations passes a decolonization resolution saying that all these European powers must grant independence to their colonies, Denmark passes a constitutional change saying that the Faroes in Greenland, these are not colonies. These are brother nations in the Danish Commonwealth. And look, each of them has two seats in our parliament, and they have devolved government, which at the time was a Dutch, right? The devolved government was not noticeably devolved by 1958, but gradually there has been. It's one of those things that has. It starts out as 90% lies by volume, but eventually, if you tell yourself and particularly if you tell your your kids the same lie often enough, right? They grow up believing it a little more than you did.
Right. So it's a home rule is more.
One thing is that's a lot of land.
Yeah.
Not to have some kind of valuable mineral deposits. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of land was considered a joke, a lot of parts of French West Africa and all that. But eventually they found things that were worth taking. I mean, are there any rumors about Greenland?
Oh, there's a
there
lot.
There are known to be gemstones, rubies, I think, in particular. It is not obvious that it's economical to exploit them because this is extraordinarily hostile environment. There's probably just by, you know, the amount of seabed, Arctic seabed involved, there's probably going to be oil somewhere there. But again, having an offshore oil rig in the Arctic where sometimes there's big chunks of ice, sometimes there are chunks of ice floating in the water that are bigger than your production platform. Right? Mm-hmm. It's not immediately obvious that it's economical to exploit these deposits. It's this gets a little fraught, right? Because it's one of those things where people in Greenland who want independence sooner rather than later will point to these natural resources and say, but we can develop these, and that is an economic model for, because Greenland has the practical problem that if they were to become independent tomorrow, they would immediately have a currency crisis.
Right.
Because the currency flow is there is a lot more money flowing out of Greenland than there is flowing into Greenland, and the balance is made up by block grants from the Danish government. That doesn't mean that that is sometimes pointed to as meaning that Greenland is a money losing proposition as colonies go. You should never believe anybody who tells you that their colony is a money losing venture.
Yes, the Brits always did that. Yes.
That is always 100% lies by volume. So sometimes it is a money losing venture. That's because they're bad at exploitation. It's not because they're not trying. But
when it's losing money, there's somebody important making a lot of money. It's somebody else losing the money.
But even when you add up all the money flows, right, there is the money. Prices are a political construct, right? So the money flows don't tell you the whole story. There's a million places you can hide the ball. We can talk about that on another show, right? How empires hide the ball on how they extract value from their colonies. But it's just I just want to know, when we're talking about, you know, Greenland being a net recipient of Danish money, that doesn't mean necessarily that Greenland is is being subsidized. It can be the other way around, and the ball is just out of sight.
Right. So a couple of things I want to say here. There was a really good article in The Lever, which is David Sirota's sort of media project, about specifically Silicon Valley, you know, oligarchs' interest in Greenland. And part of that it has to do with some companies that they've set up. There's a company, Cobalt Metals, that uses artificial intelligence to locate and extract rare earth metals. And they have decided that Greenland is a big target for how they're going to make a lot of money. It's thought that there's a lot of copper yet to be exploited. There's a lot of nickel that could be exploited. There are a lot of other minerals, tungsten, lithium, palladium, you know, there's a lot of them. Now, again, how easy to exploit it is another question. But also, some of these same investors, guys like Mark Andreessen, you know, the guy who founded Netscape with the egg-shaped head, are also investors in one of these seasteading projects. I think it's called Praxis or something. And they have been pushing this idea. This goes back a few years. This dream of theirs of creating a Mars colony, but they've identified Greenland as the place to set up their libertarian Mars colony, where, again, it would be a completely private corporate run, you know, colony with corporate libertarian laws where the market rules everything. And you don't have to deal with the state. You just deal with CEOs. Isn't that wonderful?
But that's not how any of that works. What ends up happening is you don't deal with the state, you deal with the guy who runs the supply ship, because that colony would die the first winter they don't get any supply ships.
Right. Yeah.
But it is a persistent dream. I mean, I remember a novel that was popular on the fringes called The Birth of the People's Republic of Antarctica. And it was like, you know, all us freaks will get together and we'll found a new country.
Another place that die where your colony dies immediately once the supply ship stops.
Yes, exactly. By the way, speaking of popular culture in Greenland, during the whole COVID kind of lockdown area, there was this pretty good movie. I think it was probably a Danish movie called Greenland. Was that a Danish movie? Like, the concept was great. The execution was good. It was like a Danish American film, maybe, where there's a nuclear war. And the only way to survive was to get on, you know, one of the few military transports and get, you know, somehow get into one of the big underground city bunkers in Greenland. And so it's about this sort of family struggle and, you know, to to get there during this nuclear war. I don't know if anybody else saw it. It was pretty good. No. It was like the concept was great and the execution was good, I would say.
So are these imaginary shelters or are there giant shelters in
There are no giant shelters. Okay. there is an American military base which used to be called Thule Air Base. Now it has a local name. But the locals who were ethnically cleansed when it was built... we don't call it ethnic cleansing. We call it eminent domain. Right. But the locals who were ethnically cleansed when it was built have not been allowed to get back to their homes. But at least now the name is in the local language instead of being called Thule Air Base, for whatever consolation that is. That used to be an Air Force base. These days it's a Space Force base, which more or less tells you what the point of it is. It's very far north in Greenland, and if you look at not a Mercator map, but one of the polar projection maps, you will see that the northern end of Greenland is very convenient if you live in the Midwest, United States, and you have a friend somewhere in the Ural Mountains, and you may want to send an express present to your friend by email. Or maybe you want to have a radar station there to see if your friend is trying to make a surprise party for you by airmail. So that is an American...
That's strategically located. I think if I'm not mistaken, the northernmost point of Greenland is the northernmost land point in the world, closest to the North Pole. It's like 450 something miles like or that. Something from the North Pole, yeah.
Thule Air Base is not quite at the northernmost point. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's even at the northernmost inhabited point, but it is pretty far north, and it is very conveniently located for particularly back when the airmail that delivered your presents to your friend in the Urals were these big airplanes rather than the rockets, right? Having that radar station was very useful, and having an airstrip there was very useful. And we know that there were some of these big planes there with atom bombs on them. We know that because one of them fell down.
That happened a lot during the Cold War.
That was not so good. And what was also not so good was that the people who were sent in to clean up the wreckage were not told that it had hydrogen, but it had been carrying hydrogen bombs. And one of the reasons they were not told is that there were not supposed to be any hydrogen bombs there because the Danish government had promised the Greenland government that there would be no hydrogen bombs on this base.
Wow. So did the Danish government know that there were, or was it just the Americans who knew?
Of course the Danish government knew. I'm not sure they've ever admitted that, but of course they fucking knew.
So this brings up an important, I mean, there are a few things we still have to talk about here, and one of them is this, the relationship between the American Empire, the American National Security State, and Denmark. And my impression is that Denmark has been in a quiet, under the radar way, one of the most sort of loyal and kind of enthusiastic supporters of the U.S. Like in Afghanistan, I seem to recall, you know, I knew some people who served there. Like the Danish, despite being a social democracy, you know, and having Haagen-Dazs and things that probably the right hates about Denmark, has been a very loyal ally. Is that correct?
Remember when all y'all were tapping Angela Merkel's phone? Those phone taps came in at least partially through a Danish cable. And that was one of those. That was a case where it may actually legitimately be the case that the politicians were not told that this was just some officer in in the Danish secret police who went on more or less their own initiative. Yeah, yeah, we the Americans are our friends, right? Mm-hmm. So they should be allowed to install this equipment. These yeah, it can be a little hard to tell when the deliberate Anglophilia starts and when the common stupidity ends. But that was not the best day our secret police has ever had.
Ah, so it was a scandal in Denmark when this was exposed.
Well, it was a scandal in Germany.
Yes, I know that. Yeah.
We did not make any new friends that day.
It must have been quite a shock if the population is however secretly pro-American, when Trump started making these bellicose noises about we're going to get Greenland one way or another. What has been the reaction in Denmark?
Particularly from the elite class, the political class, I guess.
So yeah. Trump made noises about buying Greenland the last time he was president.
Right, 2019.
And back then he was told, well, Greenland is not for sale. And then somebody jangled some keys in front of his face and he looked away. And yeah. The whole thing was sort of forgotten.
Yeah.
And it,
squirrel.
Yes.
Yeah. It seems that, and again, I'm going purely by public reporting, but it seems that the Danish government thought that was what was happening this time around again, because they went into this call that was reported, and we'll go into how that was reported, but it was reported that they were shocked by that call, right? It seems that they thought, okay, we'll have a call with him, we'll clarify our position, and then he will move on to the next shiny object. And this time he seems to have been more serious on that call.
Yeah.
And that elevated the issue from this quaint thing that this rather buffoonish American says from time to time to an actual five alarm fire in the Foreign Service. And they then went to our European partners, France and Germany, and to our Nordic partners, who are also, of course, our European partners, Sweden and Norway and Iceland and Finland. And one of the things they did was they leaked the call. They briefed our European partners on the contents of the phone call, and then our European partners leaked the contents of the phone call to the Financial Times.
Yes,
so
yes,
it happened at one, which I thought was rather savvy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Our government did not leak anything to the Financial Times. We told our friends, and then they leaked. Which both shows that they are concerned, and it shows that we are not tattling to the reporters.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually thought that was quite savvy.
Mm-hmm.
And the French and the Germans seem to be taking it seriously, they have been making noises about maybe we should have European troops on Greenland, in addition, they're very careful to emphasize, in addition to the American base there, not instead of, but it's easy to see a scenario where it becomes instead of, because it's, once you have troops there, it starts being a little, you know, if you want us to pay more for our own defense, maybe you can stop paying for these troops you have on this. And I mean, I can't imagine that anybody in the U.S. Space Force likes being posted to Thule Air Base.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Northern Greenland has a certain austere beauty. So my mental image of your typical U.S. Space Force non-commissioned personnel is not of people who have a great appreciation for that type of beauty.
No. They all imagine themselves, I'm sure, Tom Cruise and Somewhere Sunny.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think now we have to, you know, bring it really up to the present, well, we have anyway, and try and guess, in a sense, you know, where it goes from here, what Trump's options are, what Denmark and Greenland's options are. But first, I just want to clarify again, because it's very weird, this, you know, Europeans are, and I include Americans in this, man, with their legalisms, like, Greenland is a part of Denmark, but not a part of the EU, except as a territory of the EU, and therefore not actually officially a part of NATO, even though Denmark is an integral member of NATO. Those, like, how does that work?
Those are unrelated. So Greenland is a part of the Danish Commonwealth, but is not a part of the EU. Greenland used to be part of the EU, but left the EU, is not a part of NATO, and that is because the Greenland Parliament has decided to not be part of those communities. Constitutionally, Greenland can take home, as it's called, policy areas with certain limitations, and of course, in practice, their ability to do so is limited by the fact that they have less than 60,000 people, so any policy area that requires a certain amount of technical specialists, they're very dependent on Denmark's ability to train and provide technical specialists, and there's also the funding question. On paper, they have quite extensive powers to take home policy areas. In practice, there are levers that the Danish government can pull if they are displeased with a Greenland decision. So the level of sovereignty there is both parties have sort of agreed to not find out exactly how sovereign Greenland is. But yeah, yes, Greenland is not in NATO. Greenland is not in the EU. Greenland is in the Danish realm. This sort of arrangement is not that unusual. Norway is not in the European Union, but is in the European Economic Area, and it is in the Nordic Passport Union, which means it is in Schengen. Britain used to be in the European Union, but even then was not in Schengen, which means right. Ireland is not in Schengen. There's a whole patchwork of overlapping jurisdictions and jurisdictional borders, which is being harmonized. But if we make the analogy to Germany, we are a lot closer to the Holy Roman Empire than to the Prussian Zollverein.
Right. <Yeah. laughs> So I guess the question then is, like, if Trump decides to mass forces and, you know, on nuke, you know, is that Article 5 for NATO?
And that's nuke, N-U-U-K.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, does it matter? Again, Turkey took a bite out of Cyprus and nobody cared.
Yeah.
NATO is not an organization that protects you from American or Turkish aggression, or French for that matter. Mm-hmm. It's just not, that's not the point of NATO.
Yeah. it frames conversations about it, but ultimately, NATO is for America, period.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, it, yes.
Let's be real here. The question, if France were to place a special forces training base somewhere in Greenland for training, you know, harsh environment survival or whatever, making sure that their foreign legionnaires grow hair on their chest before they get sent into combat, whatever pretext you conjure up, right? And the Americans roll in and tell the French to evacuate that base. They probably would. I mean, yeah. France, let's be real, France is not going to send a nuclear bomb to San Diego over Greenland.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if it were to come to that, that would not be cricket. Right? Mm-hmm. The response so far from our European partners has been more firm than it was at a similar stage in Ukraine's negotiations with Russia, which did end up leading to a war. And I think looking at that, I think it's a good, as good as it, I don't know what would happen. It's very hard to predict. But if I were to pick a model for how that sort of military confrontation would go, it would probably be Ukraine. There would be support that would go all the way up to, but fall just short of actually mattering. Mm-hmm. Right. And the Americans would roll over Greenland. Obviously, the Americans would roll over Greenland much faster than Russia is rolling over Ukraine. Obvious reasons, but the diplomatic repercussions, I think, would be based on what noises are coming out of other European capitals. I think the diplomatic repercussions would be similarly severe. Mm-hmm. That would shatter a number of illusions,
it would shatter the Northern European heart of NATO that was born in a post-war era where those countries were seen by the American public, at least, as much more important than really either Greece or Turkey, which were seen as marginal.
A lot of people would be undeceived, to use a phrase, if that were to happen. And what consequences that would have, I don't know. But I also don't think that will actually happen. It's not, I mean, who knows? Many things are possible. Smarter people have done dumber things this century.
Yeah.
But
what would be the odds of an insurgency? How close to
0%.
Yeah, okay.
0%. The NYPD could occupy Greenland.
Okay.
Yeah, well, they're rough.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but you wouldn't even need to send in the National Guard.
It's, right, okay.
They would think it sucked because it's cold and it's dark most of the year. And the locals, I don't think, would be particularly... I think the NYPD would make themselves unpopular with the locals real quick.
Yes.
But can they do it logistically? Absolutely. It would be expensive, but expensive... in a per capita sense, not in an absolute sense.
Right. I think that there is a good chance that Trump is pretty serious about this. I don't think he wants war. I think he likes to try to scare and bully people into getting a deal. But I think, Jacob, it was you who said, you know, Trump's, his geopolitics sensibilities are the sensibilities of a big city slumlord. And you could just see that everything is a real estate opportunity or not a real estate opportunity. Adding land, however shitty that land is, it makes his land, his real estate empire grow. And people like, you know, more land. And I mean, he's even approaching the whole, you know, Israel, Palestine problem from a real estate perspective. I don't know if you guys saw this yet, but it was just last night or this morning, Trump came out and said he's really pushing for ethnically cleansing all inhabitants from Gaza. Americans move in, turn it into like a beachside resort. Everybody's happy.
Yeah, he called it a Riviera or something. And then he said, and we'll move everybody in there. And also Palestinians. I mean, it was like once they've been away for a generation or so, they'll probably be permitted to come back if they buy a two-week package.
Right.
I think it is best to assume that Trump is serious about what he is saying in the moment he says it. Mm. he does not strike me as a man who has a lot of attention span or, frankly, object permanence.
Yes, I agree. But this administration, I think, judging Trump's two by Trump one might be a mistake. I mean, we'll see. Yeah. But Trump two has a lot more. Look, Trump one, he ran against the Republican Party, and the party was broken, and he defeated the Republican Party. So a lot of people in the Senate, the House, the whole party, and the military, you know, industrial establishment didn't like him in 2016 to 20. And everybody assumed this is some weird aberration. This is some flu virus. We're going to get rid of it and go back to normal. And this time around, he's had a lot of time to plan. He's got a lot of more serious
people.
There has
been serious thought behind this administration. And that's what I wonder about the whole Greenland gambit and the Panama gambit as well, which is, you know, there's a scene in Army of Darkness where the bad Ash suddenly has this little car horn in his right hand and he honks it twice and then hits the guy with the left jab.
Yes.
And maybe, you know, what Trump's real concern here is making the oligarchy foolproof and bulletproof. Mm-hmm. And all of this is a show in service of that.
Yeah, to keep people with their hair on fire while he
I could see Panama. The thing is, I'm sure that when he says something, he's serious about it. It's just that he is but a mortal, right? He has to prioritize. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how far up in the stack Greenland is. We've seen that whatever his pronouncements about Gaza and Israel, the person he actually sent to be the American interlocutor to Israel when he's not looking, his message has been consistently, don't make the news. Stick to these agreements because we don't want loud explosions that will make the news. That's how I've been this Witkoff character. That has basically been, or at least that is a reading that is consistent with what we have seen out of that guy.
Yes,
which tells me, I mean, maybe Trump wants to turn the Gaza Strip into Atlantic City in the Levant.
Yeah. But I think that's less serious, to be honest. That's so messy, man.
Or at least it's not as high. I'm sure he means it in the interview where he says it.
Yes.
But when he goes home from that interview, there's 100 things that he wants more than he wants that.
Yes.
And I have the same sense with, particularly, I mean, last week I was less optimistic. Last week I gave it about 50-50 that the Europeans would fold before Trump got bored. but this week I'm more optimistic.
Because they're not folding, is that right?
Partly because they're not folding as much. I mean, our European partners have given more support to Denmark than they gave to Ukraine at the same point in their negotiations. They're actually talking about troop commitments, which took Macron some months into the war to start talking about.
2 years.
So that's and this is before any soldiers have even moved up to the border.
Right.
So there is more seriousness from, and also I think the French understand based on their response that it would set a poor precedent if they did nothing while the Americans rocked up to a small European country and shook it down for its overseas departments. France has those as well.
Yes, a lot. No, that's a great point. That explains why France. So it's like, why would France take such an interest? France, as we know from one of our very first episodes on that, what's it called? Like the economic exploitation.
Exclusive economic zone.
Yeah, because of all of France's island holdings in the Pacific, and not just New Caledonia, but all over the place. They have I want to say number one or number two or something in the world amount of, you know, certainly in the top three.
The Brits probably have more.
Yeah, but it was it would just shock me. But we knew the Brits had little bases everywhere.
Yeah.
But the French have huge, you know, zones all over the world. And yeah, they should be worried. You're right. That's a good point.
Yeah. So I think they. I mean, who knows? The current French government do not strike me as the greatest strategic minds in the history of that country. Even in the history of that iteration of their republic.
Yeah.
Macron is not a De Gaulle, but even people considerably dumber than Macron should be able to connect the dots here and realize that this would be a bad precedent.
Yeah. It would hit the bottom
even
line.
To the American public, I think, although they're proving very difficult to shock, Americans displacing or actually bombing French troops in a NATO territory would be a little weird.
Yeah. Yes. I Panama, I can absolutely see. But once I look at all the things that Trump has been talking about and all the things that he has been doing, he has actually been moving troops to the border with Mexico. And he has actually... the Canadians have actually committed to moving troops to the Canadian border. And the Mexicans as well have committed to moving troops to their border. So people are moving, right? Mm-hmm. The actual costs are being incurred. A transatlantic phone call is very cheap. And that is the only thing that Trump has actually done about Greenland so far. Other than give a press conference, but I think a press conference is a negative cost for him. I think he likes those.
Yes.
And he's busy having his pet boa loot the treasury.
Yes.
And that causes the things that are coming out about what those people are doing with connecting their own computers to data centers that I'm honestly surprised nobody has gotten shot.
It's amazing. Musk is,
in a country that had an opposition, somebody would.
Yeah.
But if they had tried to do what they have been doing to the Treasury, to Goldman Sachs data center, G4S security would have shot somebody. I'm serious. The data centers of systemically important financial institutions are no joke.
Yes.
They have armed guards, and they will shoot you if you try to rob them.
But you're right, though. I mean, what Musk is doing, and it's harder to grasp and understand. So it's good to have something like we're going to take Canada, Greenland, and Panama to distract people. While you get down to the real business, which is basically all of the government money flows, however many trillions that is. All the information on that is now at the choke point is now under the control of the world's richest oligarch, privatized, basically. It is unfucking believable.
That's not the scariest version of that. The scariest version is that they think they control it, but they don't, because none of these people can can understand the COBOL for mainframes dialect that the stuff is written in.
But they're going to download it all and figure it out at some point after they're out of government, no? I mean...
Well, they're making commits to the production environment. They're testing and production, just like the OceanGate guy.
What does that mean?
They're making code changes to the actual live production system.
Okay, I see.
The system that actually executes transactions. So here's a hypothetical for you, and I don't know that this will happen, but here's a hypothetical for you. How many missed payroll runs is the U.S. Army away from finding itself a new president?
Yeah.
Not to mention, the really important thing is that I just qualified for Social Security. I'm not even going to get one check.
Yeah.
And that is a genuine possibility if they brick one of those mainframes.
Yeah.
That could mean that the federal government, which very much includes a number of people who know how to use automatic weapons and are well supplied with them, will not get their payments, their salaries in the next regular payroll run.
Yeah.
These people do not strike me as people who have a firm grasp of backup and disaster recovery protocols. If they break one of those systems because they're fudging around with a go-to statement and points it at the wrong line, I don't know that they have the backups or the people or the good sense, for that matter, to roll it back to a state where it worked.
Well, they're busy mass firing people who would maybe be able to do that. But yeah, as I understand it, so the coding for their proprietary systems goes back decades, and what they know, and it's a clunky system, but it works as it is. And like something as simple as the introduction of an emoji once, like almost broke the system because it was too new and too weird for it. And so so it in a way, if you bring in people who don't know what they're doing, it does seem easy to break, and it could be really disastrous. So, and that would kind of be the end of the whole Greenland thing, I would think.
Let's make Greenland here.
Yeah. That's what I was sort of circling back to. That it seems to me that these people are busy. One, they're busy with other things, and two, the other things they are busy with are likely to make them busy with yet more things in the very near future.
And, as they're in office longer, they'll create more shit.
And it's. I can believe that they're going to do something to Mexico just because that's a longstanding obsession of a lot of their constituents. I can believe that they will grab Panama because that's actually, I mean, it's not economically useful in the sense that the U.S. already has everything they could possibly want from Panama.
Yes.
But there is a real asset there. Mm-hmm. It's not obvious what there is in Greenland to grab other than the Space Force base up north. As a business proposition, it's, again, never believe somebody who tells you that the colony is a loss-making enterprise, but it is a marginal one. Mm-hmm. This is not it's not a strategic asset on the level of the canal that cuts shipping times between Lima and New York in half.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So Greenland is nowhere near the point yet, even with global warming, to where there is a northern shipping route that, you know, that Greenland would, and who owns Greenland would massively benefit from. Like, we're still a long way away from that.
For the purpose of northern shipping, the U.S. Navy already owns Greenland.
Right. Okay.
It's not like it. I mean,
yeah.
What are they gonna do? Put a submarine pen there? I don't see it. And I also
a toll booth.
No. That's not how empires work.
Yeah.
The boat barbarians want to remove toll booths.
Yeah.
From the sea lanes.
Right.
That's always how maritime empires work. They hate the toll booths. They don't want to even set that, even provide that concept to people's minds. But also the northern route. There are port pairs for which it would be advantageous, but. They're mostly east-west pairs, which means they're mostly going to be car and container traffic. And that means, so super quick primer, this is actually something we could spend a whole show on, but super quick primer, raw materials like oil and dry bulk, they go north-south. Predominantly, not exclusively, but predominantly, and containers and refined products go east-west. In if you look at a global vessel tracker and sort of color code the little ship, there are apps on the internet where you can color code the little ships and watch them draw patterns on a world map. And this is mostly relevant for East-West, which means it's most relevant for refined products and containers and cars. And I don't see a lot of refineries that can connect to where it's meaningful to sail refined products from.
Right.
And containers are very dependent on having populated areas along the route. Right. It's wow. One thing that you can go from Shanghai to Le Havre faster if you go north than if you go through Suez. Mm-hmm. But you can't fill a ship with Shanghai and Le Havre or Shanghai and Wilhelmshaven. Right. You have to actually go down to Tanjung Pelepas near Singapore in order to fill the ship. And you want to drop off some of the containers in the Mediterranean. Otherwise, you have to run a smaller ship and you get worse unit economics.
Mm.
So for the container trade, the northern route,
right.
I'm sure there is a service there, but it's not... It's not going to just shift all the cargo, all the, right. the China-Europe cargo, because it's shorter, because right. there's much less population along the northern coast.
That makes sense. Okay, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, very last thing, and then we'll let you go, and I just wanted to ask you. I came across, and I did a Google Translate, a poll in Denmark about Greenland in a newspaper or media outlet called... I'm just going to, how I say it, Jyllandsposten or Jyllands?
Jyllandsposten.
Yeah, okay.
Jyllandsposten, yes.
Right, so they did this poll 10 years ago about what the Danes believe about Greenlanders. And it's kind of funny because it turns out Danes aren't, not totally different from Americans in a way. So it says here, half believe that Greenlanders have a higher annual consumption of alcohol than Danes, while a fifth, correctly, believe the opposite is true. So actually Danes drink more than Greenlanders, but all the Danes or half of the Danes think Greenlanders are a bunch of drunks. 42% believe that every third fisherman in Greenland grabs a kayak when fishing at sea. And 27%, okay, 45% either believe or know that baby seals are caught near Greenland, even though this does not actually happen. So it's just a bunch of like little factoids like that that I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, the alcohol consumption thing I know where that comes from. That's actually a really sad story. Greenland had a really bad recession in the early 90s. So a lot of Greenlanders would wash up in the Danish large wow. cities.
Okay.
And like a lot of people who have not historically had a lot of access to distilled spirits, they have lower tolerances for the Native Americans.
Yes, yes.
Native Americans, yeah. they actually physiologically have lower tolerance.
Right.
Just because it hasn't been in Europeans have had 10,000 years to
get drunk.
Breed in, yeah. Yes, to yeah. breed in tolerances for
right.
for alcohol, and that's. That's measured. It's not. I mean, like all these genetic variances. It's not large, but it is measurable.
That's actually a really sad misconception that they have. It's brought me down.
The typical Danish interaction with an Inuit in the 90s, mid to late 90s, was. An unemployed drunk person on a bench in a Danish city, which of course is a tiny minority of the actual right. Inuit, but most Danes don't go to Greenland, right?
Right.
Most Danes see the Greenlanders who come to Denmark, and mm-hmm. those were for at least for a time very sad existences usually.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
And it's,
Well, at least they're doing better now, right? I mean, it's that period is over and they're doing better now.
And there has actually, just to round off, one thing that the Danish government has done is propose a slew of new initiatives for our North Atlantic brother countries, brother nations, which is, I mean, it's a little cringe. It's a little bit, I notice you're talking to the divorce lawyer. Maybe I should start doing the laundry. but they're, I mean, they are good initiatives, even if we should already have been doing them. Mm-hmm. So if nothing else comes of it, at least it has lit a little fire under people to get Greenland some things that they really should have had a long time ago.
Right.
So maybe something good. Well, maybe we can end on a happy note.
Yeah.
assuming the Americans don't invade.
Right. Well, I think we could end it here. Greenland wound up being a lot more interesting, and we talked a lot longer about it than we thought. So obviously, we can't now talk about USAID. So we'll have to put that off for the next episode. So let's close out this episode here. Thank you again, everyone. Thanks, John, Brendan, and
thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.